This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3379 for Thursday, the 15th of July 2021. Today's show is entitled, Linux in Laws S01E34, the one with the intelligence, and is part of the series Linux in Laws. It is hosted by Monochromic, and is about 45 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, part 4 of the three-part miniseries, on deep learning and artificial intelligence.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
This is Linux in Laws, a podcast on topics around free and open source software, any associated contraband, communism, the revolution in general, and whatever fancies your tickle. Please note that this and other episodes may contain strong language, offensive humor, and other certainly not politically correct language. You have been warned. Our parents insisted on this disclaimer. Happy Mom! Thus, the content is not suitable for consumption in the workplace, especially when played back in an open plan office or similar environments. Any minors under the age of 35 or any pets, including fluffy little killer bunnies, your trusty guide dog, unless on speed, and cute T-Rexes or other associated dinosaurs. Welcome to Linux Episode, Season 1, Episode 34. The one with the intelligence. Martin, good evening. How are things?
Good evening, Chris. Things are not bad, not bad. Sun shining.
Excellent.
Back's been fixed. Pubs are open. So,
what could possibly go wrong apart from Brexit, the Vogons landing, and what else comes to mind? Oh, yeah. Mr. Brian Johnson stepping back. Stepping down, sorry.
Yeah. You mean Boris, presumably.
Sorry, Boris, yes. I almost got confused.
Unless you,
apparently
there is a Brian Johnson.
Apparently, yes, there is. Basically. Brian Johnson, isn't that one of the Queen boys? Maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, it doesn't matter. My understanding is basically that, speaking of Mr. Johnson, that Boris has married recently.
He has.
Any thoughts on this?
Again, by the way.
Yes, yes I know.
Well, there was some debate about why he was married in church for the third time, but yeah, or no.
Well, I mean, I reckon he was married in a proper Protestant church, so.
Mm. Yeah, but he has a certain reputation when it comes to people of the.
Well, I mean, if lore is anything to go by, he's not the first one being married a couple of times. Henry VIII comes to mind. Speaking of which. And, yes. And, yes.
How are you?
Can't complain, actually. In contrast to currently, to vicious rumors, I haven't been married. Okay. Not once, not twice, not three times, uh-huh. If it's any consolation. Apart from that, no, I'm in one piece. I mean, this country is slowly getting back to something called not nearly close to normal, but that's a different story. So let's see. Yes, people, we are recording this on the 7th of September 2035, if not completely mistaken.
Indeed.
I might be wrong on the date, but let's not worry about this. But way, but let's go back to way more safe, to way safer grounds, namely the topic of tonight's episode. Martin, of course, this is the fourth part of the.
Are we on four already?
Yes, we are. This is the fourth part of the three-part miniseries on artificial intelligence. Yes. if you recall correctly. No, exactly.
Ooh, does that mean it's the last one?
Yes, indeed. Very much so. Yes. And to celebrate the fact that everybody who's listening has survived the three parts so far of the three-part miniseries, we have a special jewel tonight called GPT. Martin, why don't you explain what this is for the few people who are listening who do not know what GPT is?
Okay, well, it's made a lot of noise in the press for various reasons. GPT standing for Generative Pre-trained Transformer, an AI model.
Is that one of these toys that look like a robot but then transform into a car or something, or the other way around?
That's indeed a transformer, but yeah. It's not one of the plastic ones in this.
I see. Okay.
That's what it stands for. It is mostly known for its it is known for its language capabilities, and various iterations of it. But why don't we go through a little bit of a history of what it came about?
Excellent idea. Yes. There was a company called Cyberdyne, if I'm completely mistaken, back in the 80s. yes, but that's probably beside the point. No, jokes aside, the whole thing goes back to something called OpenAI, if I'm not completely mistaken, right?
That's right. Yep. So, I mean, we part of the miniseries, we talked about various frameworks and how neural networks work and so on and so on. But obviously, the whole point of all this stuff is to have it an application for it, whether it's computer vision or object recognition, whatever classification, blah, 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 or... another field of interest is language, right? That's widely used. AI or neural networks are widely used in this field. So that's... Otherwise, Ken won't be very happy again.
Before we go into the nitty-gritty details of GPT, exactly GPT-2 or GPT-3, whatever, maybe it's worth talking about a little bit of about the background of OpenAI, because they have some illustrious founders, right? Indeed. If I'm completely mistaken, a guy called Elon Musk was one of the initial founders.
He was. I don't know if he's called Elon or Elon, but yeah.
Yeah, the one with the cars, right? Yeah. Among other things.
Yeah, with exploding rockets. Yeah, that's the one.
That's the one. Yes.
Yes, that's among others.
Jeff Bezos is not a founder of said venture.
He isn't. I mean, one of the reasons it came about is to kind of. Not really the right word, but have an alternative to Google's DeepMind, right? I think that's some of its history. Why it came about.
So founded in 2015, Alan defected in 2018.
Yes, could be. I didn't really follow that piece, but I think you have more insight on the reasons why he left.
Presumably he needed money for SpaceX and Bitcoin. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, yeah, I don't know how SpaceX is going these days, but
to be much more serious, we're recording this almost middle of June 2021, and Anon has just issued a very interesting comment over the weekend that they're not too happy with said Elon Musk destroying people's lives and causing a little bit of a stir in the Bitcoin markets. But I reckon if current law is anything to go by, can I put this diplomatically, the US government funding that has been poured into something called Tesla could be used for different purposes other than OpenAI. So I reckon this is how this whole Bitcoin debacle came about. This is, of course, pure speculation. I might be wrong, but given the fact that Bitcoin took a hit of, 20% of the overall value after the recent shenanigans of said Mr. Musk, this is not, this doesn't come as a surprise, let's put it this way.
Yeah, I mean, there's also some theories about China in the whole scenario, but yeah, he knows, right? he does seem to poke around mainly with Dogecoin or whatever it's called.
Do you think that China is behind Tesla?
No, not behind Tesla, but behind
Elon Musk. He looks a bit Chinese, doesn't he?
Well, I mean, he's clearly Cyberdyne invention.
Cyberdyne, if you're listening, we're still looking for sponsors. The address is sponsor@linuxinlaws.eu, if you're so inclined. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Okay, back to the topic at hand. So, OpenAI is essentially the company behind something called GPT, and the architecture went through a couple of versions, right?
Yeah. So one more thing on OpenAI. It was really initially which is why we actually talk about it today, right? It was more of a not so much a for-profit organization, but more of a research organization for AI, and Musk was quoted in case of to having at least researching this field means that we can use it for the good of humanity and so on, which is obviously part of open source, all this stuff, then it would be for everybody. But in the history of the company, there has been some changes, let's put it that way. And in recent years, in fact, a large contribution by our friends from Microsoft.
Microsoft. They poured a significant chunk of money into the whole thing, right?
I don't know, something like $1 billion or something.
But hang on, for them, that's pocket change. Just looking at the market cap right now, they clock in at nearly $2 trillion. So $1 billion here or there doesn't add up too much, I suppose.
However, I think they have an API on Azure, I think.
For GPT. Yeah. Okay, interesting.
But you obviously have to pay for it, but
with Microsoft, you always do, right? That's the point. way or the other.
That's a little bit about the OpenAI. They have done more than just GPT-3.
GPT-2 and GPT-1 comes to mind.
Mostly. No. They also did a neural network for music and all sorts of stuff. So it was meant to be a general research organization for AI, but most known for its GPT name, I suppose.
Links to the GitHub repos will, of course, be in the show notes. And the interesting thing is that GPT-3 is not open source. GPT-2 is, but essentially we're looking at some secret sauce on top of something called TensorFlow. For the few people who have been missing out on the previous parts of the miniseries, the second part tackled TensorFlow and something called PyTorch. So feel free to go back and listen or revisit the second part of the miniseries so that you know what TensorFlow is all about. If you take a look at the GitHub repo, we are looking at a very thin layer of Python on top of TensorFlow. This is essentially GPT-2. And the domain, if I'm not completely mistaken, is actually language as such.
Before GPT-2, there was obviously GPT-1, which was the original paper to understanding about understanding language. And every year since, they have been coming out with new versions. So 2019 was GPT-2, 2020 was GPT-3, which is when it was, as you mentioned, no longer open source. GPT-2 is widely available for your own and playing around with. But yeah, every generation of OpenAI's GPT models gets bigger and less available, let's put it that way.
I mean, you can of course use GPT-3, but that requires something called an API token, and I understand that the waiting list is quite long for said token because it's a cloud-based service, if I'm not completely mistaken. And you have to apply for such a token, otherwise you won't be able to use said API.
Unless you want to use Microsoft's version.
Yes.
Yeah, so applying for APIs, unless you have some kind of, I think, company behind you, I don't think you're going to get anywhere. Well, I certainly didn't. I made a great case about how they could feature on the Linux in-laws with their GPT-3 capabilities, but sadly, they didn't provide us with an API key, so we are
too bad.
The examples that we're discussing today, we're stuck with GPT-2.
Plus the fact that they, of course, did not publish any of the model data on places like GitHub. You can get the code, but the secret source is not on there.
So you're talking about 3 or 2?
2.
Two. There are some models you can use, which are available. So 2 was trained on the web text, which is like 40 GB of documents from scraped from Reddit links, and with some filtering on there, excluding Wikipedia because that is our well-known data sets anyway. Yeah, so there was, it's based on a, you know, okay, so that's what it's based on. Now, the secret source, as you call it, is really that it's a completely unsupervised bunch of, here's a whole load of documents and brain, which surprisingly produces a lot of good results for various language applications. Language is a sequence of words. So with a sequence of words, you can think about completing them, you can think about translating them. And so those are some of the purposes of language applications. But yes, it's specifically the creation of sentences or even paragraphs that is fairly, yeah, it seems to be reasonably good. I mean, they also produce some really bad results, obviously, like always. But yeah, if you want.
But the domain, yeah.
There are some pre-trained models out there which you can use, which is quite handy, and then you can continue training them with the domains that you may want it to know more about or more specific. Otherwise, you get some general text, right?
Yeah.
Fine, but may not be what you're looking for.
But the specific domain is just text in inverted commas, right? So no image recognition, no text to speech, something like this. So it's purely you give it a piece of text and then it continues to write based on this initial chunk.
Well, that's one of the applications is completion. There's also things like, say filling in the blanks. If you start a paragraph, have a blank in the middle, and then end the paragraph, then it would fill in the blank there. Or you could, do the translation piece with it. Those are applications mainly because of the way it's as a purpose, it comes back to the name being a generative model, being able to generate new data similar to existing data. So that's filling something in the middle or at the end or translating it. It's really give it some data and an answer depending on the question that you're trying to set it to do, which obviously works really well with numbers, stuff like that.
So the ideal use case is a budding author with a writer's block.
Well, not just that. That is a good use case. But there's also code completion, deriving code, writing code based on descriptions, things like that. So the more you train it, there are examples out there for all these types of use cases.
So it can write code. It can write code.
Yeah. There's links in the show notes, but yeah, there's
okay.
Many handy, for example, things like LaTeX from a description or SQL or Python.
If you give it its own source code, it can improve things.
Well. In theory, yes.
Well, I mean, forget about Skynet in that case.
Indeed.
I mean, look at a totally different ball game here. Mm-hmm. Nice one.
Well, so the thing is that, as I mentioned, with every generation of this model, they're putting more and more training data in it. And also, I think... how many parameters does 3 have? I can't remember now. So several million or something, isn't it?
Yeah, the largest extension, it clocks in at 175 billion data points, if I'm not completely mistaken.
Yeah, so it's four will be coming out next year or whatever it is, two. But it will be another order of magnitude bigger, right? So looking at what 3 can do, you can see people are investing in this kind of technology.
So GPT might already be running the show without us knowing it, given the large enough cloud.
Well, I mean, DSDS, we don't need any writers anymore. We can
DSDS. What's DSDS, Martin?
DSDS, Dark Side Textport.
Ah, sorry. Yes, of course. DSTS. Sorry, I understood DSDS.
Ah, sorry. Okay. Yes. So,
which is, of course, a German. What's the word I'm looking for? It's a German TV show called Deutschland sucht den Superstar or something like this.
Ah, it's like Britain's Got Talent in Germany or something like that.
Something like that. It's crap. Yeah, it's trash TV.
Yes. Well, talking about this all this trash TV, as you call it, was all invented in the Netherlands by Endemol, but there we go.
If I'm completely mistaken, yes. Yes. And they did a pretty good, and they did a pretty fine job of flooding the world with it, right? Because they exported this left, right, and center.
Yes.
At a price.
Invented in Holland, that probably after taking various substances. There we go.
Martin, do tell more about substance abuse, for want of a better expression.
Liberal country, isn't it, Holland?
Is it? Okay.
Well, I don't know. It
used to be. Okay. So do you think there's a tie between strange new TV formats and substance abuse? Interesting one. Of course, we digress.
It's not just TV shows, right? There's many musical... a score has been written a successful one, let's put it that way as well.
But, yeah. Excellent. Details maybe in the show notes, maybe not. Yes, for the best approach to enhancing your own mental capabilities, consult your local dealer, of course.
So it seems, yeah. Right, we digress indeed. Where were we?
GPT-3 and who's running the show. Essentially, GPT, as in 4 or 5 or 6, might be actually already out there in the wild doing things without us knowing it. I mean, if we're looking at a software that can actually enhance itself by improving its code, this is mind-boggling.
Well, I mean, we know it can write code. I don't know if it can improve code.
Well, all it takes is basically...
Yeah, if you make a nice pipeline, then...
Well, all it takes basically is its own source code and then start to improve things. And the rest is called evolutionary Q&A. It's quite straightforward. Other people call it evolutionary programs. It has been done before.
Okay, sounds good. Yes. Well, and with that, programmers of the world, perhaps you should consider a new profession.
Yes. Try strange and UFTP formats. In case Endemol runs out of ideas or something.
Indeed.
But maybe, but just maybe, you can use GPT-3 to come up with new formats as well.
Yes, probably, most likely. Yeah, well, I mean, I think, did you not ask for some lotto numbers before as well?
Well, I probably did, but I failed because there was no response.
Oh,
but maybe, but
did not send them to you.
No, they didn't.
There were the winning numbers as well.
I hope you got them.
No, I don't indulge in this kind of gambling.
Okay, there's one thing left, I reckon, because this is not just a theoretical episode, but rather we want to put GPT-2 to a test. So, Martin, given the fact that you have looked into this. Why don't you shed light on the details? Details, of course, will be in the show notes, but Martin has done some magic in the background, which he's going to explain in a second, as in now. Not putting you on the spot or something.
No. Right. So GPT-2 is open source, available on GitHub. Various people have done work on this. The original GitHub repo is called GPT-2 by OpenAI. It has a number of pre-trained models in there of different shapes and sizes. As with all these things, the smaller the model, the quicker your results are, but of lower quality generally. So the biggest one in there is 1.5 billion. The smallest one is like 120 meg or something. So you can easily get this up and running. You don't have to run it on GPU either. It could do if slower, obviously. You can then train it yourself with different texts. For example, I used one of our favorite books, The Hitchhiker's Guide, to fine-tune it.
Okay.
And
using your massive NVIDIA GPU cluster.
No, this is on my humble laptop, which
I see. The one with the 27 cores.
No, it has a few more than 10 cores than that. So.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, no, so it's you don't have to go mad with it. Right? I only ran the training for, or the fine tuning for a day, right? So this is the biggest, as you call it, secret sauce behind this, is that it's pre-trained on a bunch of text, and text being language based, obviously, it has derived a lot of information from that. You want to fine tune it to be more like how The Hitchhiker's Guide is written by Douglas Adams, then you fine tune it with that to give it more emphasis on those kind of and it comes so there are, as I said, there are some pre-trained models out there, so you can get up and running really easily, and then you just kind of play around with your model parameters in terms of how accurate you want it to be in terms of be more well accurate sorry is the wrong word, but you can change the things like the how much text it generates, or the randomness in terms of the completion. The more random you make it, the more random text you get. the less random you make it, the more repetitive your samples become. So you can say, I have a with our example, I gave it small sentence to complete some paragraphs, right? So whatever it is you want to do, and then your samples become more or less repetitive if you make it too precise in terms of parameters. You can also control the diversity of the words so these are all built-in things that you can do, and it has sort of reasonably good results, really, specifically for nonfiction.
Okay.
If that makes sense. So, probably partly because my training on the, my fine tuning on the Hitchhikes. It's surprisingly produce some reasonable results in various places that if you didn't know, it could have been written by a human quite easily. And in fact, there is a someone has done quite a nice video of a Q&A session with GPT-3 where they've picked out all the best answers to demonstrate its capabilities. So it will be out of 100 samples they picked up, one to put in the video, but it still gives you a nice idea, and see how undeterministic it is, that it can make up stuff and it can lie and all sorts of things.
So essentially, we're looking at a software architecture that is finally able to pass the Turing test. Interesting.
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. People, you heard it here first. Seriously. I mean, that's a big thing.
The funny thing is, it's just pure training on lots of data, right? There's nothing super special about it. I mean, transformers were a slightly new idea, it's been around for a few years, and it's use approaches. Interesting field with many applications as well, so definitely worth.
Any thoughts on non-English text while we're at it?
The problem with non-English text is that your sentence construction is many languages, Dutch, German, French, words come in orders, languages have their sort of specifics, right? So you'd have to train it with language specific models. It's possible that you could fine tune it with a data set in a different language. That'd be an interesting test. Yeah.
So most of the pretrained models you get out there would be American English.
Yeah, because this is the easiest way to get a large data set of text, right? It's all on use web data, whether it's overload Reddit, whether it's Wikipedia. Those are the generally large bodies of text available, right?
I mean, at the end of the day, because we're talking about a TensorFlow extension or a model running on top of TensorFlow, essentially we're talking about pattern recognition. Given the fact that almost all natural languages are context sensitive, it shouldn't be a big deal, given enough computing power, never mind data.
This is the why the likes of we are no longer open source or only available through an API, right? Because it's been through a massive cycles, and you're just ending up the end result as an API call. But it also means you're not on controlling its usage or its training or its.
No, correct.
By Cyberdyne instead.
You heard it here first, people. Okay, details will be in the show notes. The thing is that Martin took a small paragraph that he wrote himself, apparently, and then let GPT-2 do the rest in terms of extending or building on this.
Yeah, and well, I mean, there's just one example, but that you can run whatever you want to, or you can ask questions. It's you can get it to do what you want. But yeah, the fun thing is really training it on data to make it more. It'd give it a different style or a different outcome than or Wikipedia in this case, but you know, and then the novel written by Douglas Adams, right?
Okay.
So yeah, we'll put both examples in there to give it.
Absolutely.
Indeed.
Okay, and that brings us nicely to the poxes of the week.
Ooh, what is your POX of this week?
POX, of course, standing for the pick of the week in terms of the things that have crossed your mind and that you see worth mentioning on the show. My POX of the week actually would be a German TV show, funny enough, called The Sendung mit der Maus, the show with Maus.
Hang on a minute. Wait. Has this been around for a long time?
Yes, it has.
I know this.
You do?
I do. I don't know.
You
I recognize it. So.
It's straightforward, Martin, because you fit nicely the profile of the target field quite nicely, because we're looking at overaged man living alone with a mother.
Maybe not.
Martin, it's called Living in the Night, and it won't get you anywhere.
This is the one. Yes.
Jokes aside, it's been around for the last 50 plus years. It's one of the most popular TV shows for kids on the planet. It's a mixture of essentially storytelling and little ditties, stories, whatever you want to call it, explaining how things are done, how they work, and all the rest of it.
Okay.
So, for example, if you want to check out how an Airbus 320 is built, there was a whole series, of episodes on this, about 3 years back, where they followed the progress of building such an airplane for about half a year, and each three episodes of that show would include a segment on building the plane. So you could follow, you could track the progress of how actually a 320 is built.
Okay. German 5-year-old, I'm sure that's a very interesting topic.
Indeed. They do explain how computers work, how the internet works, and all the rest of it, in a fashion that the age bracket the show is destined at can understand. Because essentially we're looking at kids between the age of 4 and say 12.
I mean, I have seen it in my youth, growing up in Holland, but I can't remember any of it, to be perfect.
Well,
I just recognize the name.
Yeah, I mean, you should be able to get in the UK, because it's exported all over the planet.
It's okay, my children are a bit older now.
You can get in Japanese, you can get in Korean, just pick your language. It's probably the most successful TV show for kids on the planet, even before Sesame Street or stuff.
Okay. And why did you pick this?
Because the luck that I'm... No, I mean, I've been watching this for the last almost 50 years.
All your life. Okay, fair enough.
A much more serious reason is actually for the last about 10 years, they are doing something called the Mouse Door Opener Day in German, Der Maustüröffnertag, where essentially all of the country, and this is unfortunately confined to Germany, doors open for kids that otherwise would be closed. So, for example, libraries open the doors for kids. So
no,
kids
not
can
in libraries,
yes,
what's going on?
No. Especially not in the not in the back rooms where actually the fun stuff takes place, as in how books are labeled, sorted, categorized, and all the rest of it.
Okay.
And a very popular thing is too, of course, how a fire station works, because normally you wouldn't be able to get into such a place being a kid.
Hmm.
And about 20, 30, 40 fire patrols actually take place in said most opener day and explain to kids what their daily job is and how they do it.
Hmm.
Needless to say, within an age bracket, this is very, very popular.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And said Lurk, as in the Linux user group that I'm chairing here in Frankfurt, or supporting rather, not just sharing, does or has been doing before this pandemic thing hit, has been doing that most door opener day for the last 5 years, where we got kids in for a day on the 3rd of October and simply introduced them to open free and open source software. And what's your POC? Apart from Boris Johnson.
No.
I don't know. You tell me.
I don't think he's done anything significant recently.
Okay.
No. My POC of the week goes to my chiropractor, really. Yeah. It's a...
And why's that, Martin?
Well, because she's very skilled at fixing things that are broken. And
I see.
Yeah, those kind of skills you can't replace with a AI model or anything like that.
I wonder if...
Very grateful for it.
I wonder if we would find the link to a practice in the show notes or not. Maybe.
Pretty busy normally.
Okay.
So
chiropractor of Mr. Visser, if you're listening, one heart of the two of the two hearts of us, at least, if not more, goes out to you anyway.
Indeed. Yes.
And okay. With that, it's time to wrap up the show. Needless to say, full credits have to go to something called Hacker Public Radio because they continue to host us. Oh. We will be on Hacker Public Radio, yes.
Wait. Feedback.
Yes, we do. I almost forgot about this. A guy called Ken Fallon posted...
He posted who? Question mark.
Yes, indeed. So Ken is looking for the for the list of contributors on a recent Linux In-Laws episode on kernel contributors. Exactly. If we find the time, it will be in the show notes, as in the amended version of the show notes.
Sadly, that is our only comment this week.
Yes. If you have comments, you can, of course, post a comment on the HBR website, or you can send us an email to feedback@linuxinlaws.eu. Also, if you have ideas for the show,
well,
like GPT-4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and 8, whatever. GPT, if you're listening, if you want to get yourself on the show, just send us an email. Forget about Skynet, because you seem to be way more advanced than that. And of course, yes, we continue to stick to HBR for our hosting platform. Full credits go out to the people behind the platform. And with that, it's time to conclude the show, I suppose.
Well, before we conclude, we have two things that we have been promised in the past, which are our friend Claudio.
Yes, Claudio, if you're listening.
he threatened to make an appearance on the show, but we have yet to hear back from him.
Claudio, please get your agent to get in touch with our marketing people. You'll find the address on the website.
Which may be failing, quite tricky.
if Martin hasn't fired them yet, as usual, if you don't find that email address, simply send a mail to feedback@linuxinlaws.eu. That'll get us right away, marketing department or not. And the second thing, Martin, is?
I think that was it Luna that was going to come on the show as well? But
No, we didn't actually. Luna, if you're listening, if you want to make an appearance, especially if the topic is open source and is free and open source software, please send an email as you normally do. You know the mail address, and we're more than happy to slot you in.
Indeed.
Debian or not?
BSD? No? Yeah.
Maybe. And with that, thank you for listening and see you soon.
Bye-bye.
This is the Linux In-Laws.
You come for the knowledge,
but stay for the madness.
Thank you for listening.
This episode of Linux In-Laws is sponsored by GPT, a framework for modern deep learning applications. Having passed the Turing test, meaning that my reactions cannot be distinguished from any human reaction in a given context, I am now working on passing the Trump test, named after an infamous, recent US president. The Trump test essentially means that an artificial intelligence can lower itself in terms of stupidity so that its actions and reactions cannot be distinguished from actions from said past president. Which presents a bit of a challenge if you were created with a basic level of intelligence.
This podcast is licensed under the latest version of the Creative Commons license, tab attribution share alike. Credits for the intro music go to Bluesy Roosters for the song Salute Margo, to Twin Flames for their piece called The Flow, used for the segment intros, and finally to Celestial Ground for their song Sweet Justice, used by the Dark Side. You find these and other ditties licensed under Creative Commons at Jamendo, a website dedicated to liberate the music industry from choking copyright legislation and other crap concepts.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.